Hello and welcome to the Total Football Soccer Show, Richmond's first, only and therefore best soccer talk show. I'm Daryl.
And I'm Taylor.
And this week on the show,
we'll talk World Cup qualification, who's booked a ticket to South Africa, who's on standby, and who's had their flight cancelled.
Chelsea have been punished for illegally pursuing a teenager. Insert your own To Catch a Predator joke here.
What do a camel, drunk driving, and inappropriate behavior with a swan have in common? They all play a part in our top five bad boys of football.
And as usual, we'll close with a spelling bee. This week's theme, Españoles. So the past week has been all about World Cup qualifying.
Right. Essentially, the world is divided into six regions, from which a total of 32 teams will actually make the World Cup. We're getting close to the end of qualifying, and 11 teams have actually already booked their place.
Yeah, that would be the host, South Africa, Japan, Australia, Brazil, Paraguay, Ghana, England, Spain, the Netherlands, and then South Korea and North Korea, which I find really interesting.
Yeah, definitely. Because I'm not sure, but I think there may be a bit of a rivalry there.
Yeah, you think right. These two actually played each other during World Cup qualifying. They were scheduled to play the first game in North Korea, but North Korea refused to let the South Koreans display their flag or play their national anthem before the game, which is customary for all teams to do. So that was an argument that escalated to the point where FIFA had to step in and move the game to a neutral venue.
So those are the teams that have qualified, but there's definitely some big-name teams that find themselves on the outside looking in.
Yeah, I suppose the most obvious is Cristiano Ronaldo's Portugal.
Oh, poor little crybaby.
Yeah.
What will he do?
So the way it works in European qualifying is there are nine groups. The winner from each group automatically qualifies. Mm-hmm. The runner-up or the best eight runners-up have playoffs against each other. But if you don't finish one or two, you don't go. And Portugal right now are in third.
Right, and they're actually in a group with, what, like Denmark, Sweden?
Hungary, Albania, Malta.
Yeah, not exactly the group of death. I mean, clearly Portugal were the odds-on favorite to win it, and now they're not. And instead, basically, you've got teams who were kind of once considered minnows now on the verge of qualification. I mean, like Slovakia, Slovenia, Bosnia-Herzegovina, and Serbia aren't exactly known as world football powers, but here they are getting close to the World Cup.
That's what makes it so hard in European qualifying now, is that there are a lot more quality teams, and so the big boys like Portugal or even France, who are struggling behind Serbia, they can't take it for granted anymore that they can just coast through qualifying.
Well, another world power who apparently can't take it easy either would be Argentina.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they lost to Brazil. They lost their arch rivals, Brazil, at the weekend, and they lost Wednesday night to Paraguay, which leaves them in fifth in South American qualifying.
Yes, which right now I believe is that's not even a guaranteed spot for the World Cup.
No, that's a playoff.
Yeah.
And they're not even guaranteed to keep fifth.
Yeah, and that's definitely amazing, because now there's actually a possibility that we could have a World Cup without Cristiano Ronaldo and Leo Messi, arguably two of the biggest players on Earth.
Yeah, I'm sure that would go down well with the World Cup's many corporate sponsors.
Yeah, probably not. But one thing that continues to confuse me about this Argentina team is that they have such talent, and yet, you know, they're pretty much played off the pitch by Brazil. So do you have any idea as to what's going on?
Well, from what I've read, it's all Diego Maradona's fault. There was just a surprise move last year when they appointed Diego Maradona as head coach, a man who's got very little to no coaching experience.
It seems to be a recurring theme that these national teams will hire these formerly great players as their head coaches, and then they're really shocked when it doesn't work out, despite the fact that they really have no managerial experience. You know, you saw it with Maradona, but, you know, he's definitely not the only one.
Yeah, there are plenty of great, great players who've jumped straight into international management, and it hasn't gone so well. I'm thinking just recently there was Hugo Sanchez with Mexico, who got sacked. Back in 2001, there was Georgi Hagi, Romania's greatest ever player, not the greatest ever manager. and even back in year 2008, there was Marco van Basten, who underperformed with the Netherlands.
Well, another guy who many don't consider to be the best manager would be Bob Bradley, but his American side are top of the table in their qualifying group.
Yeah, they're topping CONCACAF. I think Mexico are just behind them.
Yeah.
They're not officially qualified yet, but I think that's only because CONCACAF is so close at the top. I think it's only a matter of time.
Okay, so my country might qualify. Your country already has, and I'm just wondering how excited you are to see David Beckham's new tattoos on display in South Africa.
Does he have any room for new tattoos?
I think there may be some on the underside of his right foot, but I'm not sure.
Well, the big thing for me is that I know the world is still obsessed with him, but the England team has really moved on beyond David Beckham. Mm-hmm. And like, for example, Wednesday we beat Croatia 5-1 to qualify. Happy, happy day in England. Mm-hmm. But Beckham was just a bit part player. He didn't start the game.
So you'd say you're pretty optimistic about this coming World Cup?
Yeah, I am. And mostly for that reason, the fact that we're no longer obsessed with our famous players. we're fielding a team that sort of works as a unit, fits together, and so far has got the job done.
Yeah, I think like a lot of people criticize England for not having these like world famous names and everything like that, but I think that actually, you know, lends credence to the argument that they're actually a more complete team, because you have like Italy, who are, you know, all these amazing players, and they're not doing well, and England have qualified. Unfortunately, they're still going to get knocked out in the quarterfinals, as per usual, but, you know, such is life.
Potentially, but it looks like this time it won't be by Portugal.
You're listening to the Total Football Soccer Show with Taylor
and Daryl
here on WRAR 97.3, radio for the rest of us. All right, so last Wednesday, Chelsea Football Club were sanctioned by FIFA, which is soccer's world governing body, over the club's signing of French teenager Gao Kakuta. FIFA imposed a transfer ban on Chelsea, prohibiting them from bringing any players to the club until 2011.
Well, from what I've read, the reason for the ban is that Chelsea signed Kakuta as a 16-year-old after encouraging him to leave Lens and break an agreement that he had with them.
Yeah, essentially it seems that Lens had a pre-contract in place, basically, that he signed when he was 14, saying that when he was 16, when it was legal for him to become a professional, he would sign with them. However, when he turned 16, he turned up in Chelsea. So Chelsea are alleging that no pre-contract existed. Lens say there was, and it seems that FIFA sided with them because now Chelsea can't make any signings until 2011.
Yeah, so the ban is for two transfer windows.
Mm-hmm.
For those who don't know, the European teams are allowed to make signings during the summer, from June 1st to the end of August, and during January. Outside of that, they can't make any signings. So for the next two windows, that's the one in January 2010,
right,
and then summer 2010, Chelsea won't be allowed to sign a single player.
Which is a pretty huge deal, given Chelsea's recent history. They were bought by Russian billionaire Roman Abramovich, and with his purchase came a pretty heavy influx of new players, world-class players at that. And that's kind of how Chelsea have subsisted, more so on world-class players than, you know, bringing up their own youth products.
Yeah, I mean, they made the jump from being sort of a top-half Premier League team, mm-hmm. a good team, but, like, not title challengers.
Mm-hmm.
And then with Abramovich's money, he spent, I'm not even sure, but it was hundreds of millions of pounds.
Yeah,
I don't know how many rubles that is, but he... He bought top quality players and made them into the team they are today.
Yeah, and so you can see that it's going to be a huge deal for them. When you look at the squad itself, I mean, it's a big squad, but it's an old squad. And with, you know, this winter, there's the African Cup of Nations, which is a tournament that features African teams. And there are four pretty prominent African players on Chelsea's lineup that won't be there for almost a month.
Yeah, let's do the list. We've got Michael Essien, huge player.
He's Didier from Ghana.
Drogba,
yeah,
ridiculously big player. Cote d'Ivoire.
Yeah, Solomon Kalou, who's sort of their super sub striker. And then you have John Obi Mikel from Nigeria, who's their strong presence in the center mid. So that's four fairly big names.
Well, speaking of John Obi Mikel,
yeah,
his signing for Chelsea sort of brings up the idea that this isn't the first time they've been in trouble.
No, it's like the 50th or something like that. I mean, the big one that comes to mind would be Ashley Cole. When he was playing for Arsenal, he was tapped up. Do you want to kind of explain what that means? Yeah, besides actually knocking on the desk.
My understanding is that it's illegal for clubs to discuss a contract with players before they've agreed a transfer fee with that player's club.
Right.
And so Chelsea were caught discussing a contract with Ashley Cole while he was still an Arsenal player and before Arsenal had agreed to sell him.
Right, and the club itself were actually fined £300,000 for that incident, but over the past 4.5 years, they've actually been fined £900,000 for either transfer issues or disciplinary problems. So Chelsea are no stranger to these kind of punishments.
That's true, but this is by far the harshest punishment that's ever been dealt down.
Right. So that's the situation, and after the break, we'll get the reaction of a real live Chelsea fan.
You're listening to the Total Football Soccer Show with Daryl
and Taylor
on Richmond Independent Radio 97.3, radio for the rest of us.
For more insight into the Chelsea situation, Daryl spoke with Jack Goodson, who writes a blog about the Blues that can be found at chelsea.theoffside.com.
Hi, Jack. Thanks for joining us.
No problem, man. Thanks for having me.
So let's get straight to it. What's your reaction to Chelsea's punishment?
I guess like everyone else, I was a bit shocked. You know, you didn't see it coming, really, because you have no idea exactly what's going on in this type of ordeal.
Do you sort of feel like Chelsea have been singled out?
To an extent. I mean, I think FIFA is putting a fine line here with banning clubs from signing younger players because I believe this is something that's been going on for years. Nobody's necessarily really talked about it. It's kind of been shoved under the rug. I don't even think Lon was really going to pursue any action against us until maybe a few months ago when FIFA started to investigate, if I remember correctly. But I applaud them for what they're trying to do, but maybe they need to try to do this in a more understanding manner where everyone knows exactly what's going on. Because, I mean, honestly, do any of us know what is going on with this Gail Kakuta saga? It's very hard to understand. Let us know exactly what you want to do. Maybe set us, maybe come out with a set ban where players 18 years and under can't move to any other clubs. Let's get rid of this gray and let's go black and white, you know, because this is really a difficult issue to work with, you know, to regulate. So I hope they can figure it out, but it's going to be difficult with all these clubs signing younger players. So I guess we'll just have to wait and see what they do.
Yeah, definitely. I understand that Chelsea are planning to appeal against it. How do you feel about that? Obviously, are you hoping that Chelsea successfully appeal?
Obviously, you want to see your club fight whatever punishment's handed down to them. And while I understand where FIFA's coming from, and I'm not denying that we've probably done some shady stuff in the past, I think everybody knows we have, but I don't know if they're being fair with us. I mean, I think a two-window embargo is pretty hefty fine. I mean, I know that given the same to Roma in the past. Until they come out with a full ruling on this, we don't exactly know what, in fact, we did wrong. I know they say we induced the kid to sign with us, but we don't know if he had a pre-contract agreement. We don't know exactly if he was under contract at all. I know he was underage at the time, and in France, you can't sign a professional contract until you turn, I think, like, 16 or so. So it's really all kind of in a haze, right in the gray. So I guess we just have to play it by ear and see what happens.
So thinking about the two transfer window ban, assuming that the appeal is unsuccessful, how do you see that affecting Chelsea over the next year or so?
It's tough to gauge. I would tend to lean that we'll be okay. We have a solid squad, obviously. We probably have the most continuity in the Premier League, if not in Europe. And, I mean, although a lot of our players are pushing 30, I think we still have a lot of good years out of a lot of these guys. So I think we'll be okay. People are saying the African Cup of Nations is going to hurt us. I don't particularly think so. Our run during the Premier League season isn't that tough during the month that we'll lose Drogba and Essien and Mikel and those guys. So I think we'll be okay, but you never know, really.
Do you think maybe it'll give a chance to some of the academy players?
That's another possibility. You would think so. Most of our guys are out on loan right now, so it would be interesting if we recall those guys and give players like a Michael Mancini a chance.
Speaking as a Wolves fan, I'm hoping that you don't recall Michael Mancini, and I'm hoping you let us keep him for the year.
Of course. But, yeah, I mean, considering our daunted youth system has been such a bust so far, so to speak, it'd be interesting to see if we could get any of those kids. You just never know. And that could be a positive that could come out of this. You never know.
Maybe a silver lining.
Exactly. It could be, very much so.
And what do you think about Kakuta himself? Do you feel like the four-month ban for him is harsh? Because to me, that seems a big penalty for a young man.
Exactly. He's kind of a forgotten man here because everyone's looking at the club ban because it's so harsh. But is it really as harsh as this kid losing, what is it, a worldwide four-month ban? I mean, he can't play at all. How is that going to damage his credibility, his potential? Is it going to damage his morale? So, I mean, it'll be interesting to see if this kid has the character to come back from something like this.
I've been thinking about this, thinking it's going to be a lot of pressure on that kid when he finally does break into the first team. He's going to be the kid who caused the transfer ban.
Exactly. Nobody knew who he was before this. His name's all over the place. I mean, the Guardian runs a story on him, Independent. And he's all of a sudden become a household name. How is he going to be able to deal with that?
So I was going to ask about the idea of sort of a siege mentality, you know, when Chelsea come under pressure like this. Do you think there's like another silver lining of everyone sort of bonding together because of this?
Very much so. We saw that last season under Hitting, where we all came together. These players, I think they thrive off that kind of pressure and that's against everyone else mentality. And I think we're going to see that.
Last but not least, can you give me sort of a prediction for how the season's going to go now?
I don't think this is going to affect us as much as so many people believe. I mean, obviously it's a huge ordeal, but it's sort of not dealing necessarily with first-team issues. I think business will be as usual. Ancelotti will be doing his thing. The players are going to be ready to play. We're just going to continue to do what we've done, continue to build under Ancelotti, and I think we're just going to continue to get better and better this season. I don't think the brakes are going to be pumping anytime soon.
All right, Jack, thanks a lot for talking to us.
Oh, no problem. Thanks for having me, as always, guys.
All right.
So that was Jack Goodson, a Chelsea blogger whose work can be found at chelsea.theoffside.com. And I thought he brought up a really good point about the murkiness of the issue. Because you have Chelsea saying that Kakuta, wasn't contractually bound. You have Lens saying that he was. And it kind of comes down to the pre-contract issue.
So this whole pre-contract thing, what is it, like a promise ring or...
That's kind of what I don't get. And honestly, that seems sort of like an apt analogy because it seems a little bit ironic to me, and I'm sure that people will be upset by this, that it seems like clubs are saying, this is slavery, that, these big clubs are coming in and they're signing these teenagers, these youths who, don't know any better. And so they're going to sign for Chelsea because Chelsea is this huge club. And that's slavery because then they don't know any better. But vice versa, it seems like these clubs like Lens are upset because they can't keep these teenagers long enough to put them in their professional team. And so it's like they want to keep them.
And then make money by selling them.
Exactly. It's like they kind of want to keep them until they can make a profit for them, which seems more like slavery to me.
And the other thing is that it's not like Kakuta was dragged kicking and screaming
right
over to Chelsea.
Yeah, what was he offered?
I think he was offered £10,000 a week, which is like $16,000 a week.
Yeah, that'll do it.
For a 16-year-old kid. I mean, that's a lot of PlayStations or Xbox or whatever he preferred.
And I think it's interesting the way we're talking about it because it seems like we're kind of siding with Chelsea when in actuality I think we're somewhere in the middle.
Yeah, I think it all comes down to the murkiness of the whole pre-contract situation. If it's a case of Chelsea encouraging a player, Kakuta, to break his contract to join them, then they deserve the punishment. Mm-hmm. But if it's just a case of Chelsea offering a player who's not officially signed with Lens a chance to play for a bigger club, then maybe it's okay.
Yeah, and then in that case, maybe FIFA needs to step in and really define the relationship between clubs and their players who are too young to sign professionally.
You're listening to the Total Football Soccer Show with Daryl
and Taylor on Richmond Independent Radio 97.3, radio for the rest of us.
So as you know by now, each week on the show, Taylor and myself will do our top five. 2 weeks ago, we did the top five good guys of soccer. This week, bad boys. Now, obviously, our favourite bad boys are Will Smith and Martin Lawrence.
Obviously.
But unfortunately, we're limited to soccer players. So here are our top five bad boy footballers. I'll let you start, Taylor.
All right. Well, my number five is Roy Keane. The former Manchester United player has multiple reasons to be included on this list, but there's one particular incident that stands out in my mind.
Yeah, I think I know which one it is.
Yeah, he was going in for a tackle on Alf Inge Haaland. Keane blew out his knee, but Haaland thought that Keane was kind of faking or had tried to hurt him, so he gets in his face while Keane's lying on the ground and kind of yells at him. Well, Keane doesn't forget this, and 4.5 years later, he reminds Haaland of the insult by putting the bottom of his cleat into Haaland's knee and injuring him for a good bit of time. Put him out for a while, and at the time, said it was an accidental tackle, but then in his autobiography later on said it was an intentional tackle, premeditated, because he wanted revenge.
Yeah, and that is terrifying that you can... that a tackle's premeditated by 4 years.
Yeah, a little bit. He's not a nice guy.
I mean, that's part of what made him a great player, right? It's his...
fiery temperament.
His fiery temperament, but yeah that's that's clearly going too far.
That's also what got him like kicked off the Irish national team, was that same fiery temperament.
This is so true. Yeah. So I guess we'll do my number five.
Yeah.
All right. Mine is a Scottish striker, Duncan Ferguson. He's a bad boy in a bad way, the same as Keane, in that he was he actually spent I think 3 months in prison after headbutting John McStay in the Scottish Premier League.
Nice.
But he also just the once used his violence for good. When two burglars broke into his home, rather than them taking his stuff, he accosted them, injured one of the men that they had to spend a couple of days in hospital, but both burglars were arrested.
Nice. All right, we'll see. There you go. He's a disciplinarian. Much like my number four, which is Vinnie Jones. A lot of people know Vinnie Jones as an actor. He's in Snatch and those kind of movies. But before
I think
that,
actor's a generous term.
He's a person who appears in films occasionally for money. But before that, he played for Wimbledon FC, and he was kind of known as their enforcer. And there's two incidents that really stand out. The first was when Jones's Wimbledon was playing Tranmere in an FA Cup match. And Tranmere had a player named Dave Chaloner who had this ridiculously long throw-in. And Wimbledon had practiced all week as to how to prevent that throw-in from affecting their defense, and they really hadn't found a solution. So minutes before the match, they're all kind of nervous, freaking out about what to do. Vinnie Jones just says, don't worry about it. I figured it out. So the match starts, and 10 minutes in, Vinnie Jones basically just takes out the guy's legs and stomps on his arm so he can't throw the ball in anymore. So it's a pretty effective solution. But also, if you Google image search Vinnie Jones and squeeze, and you'll get an idea of how he defended players, especially Paul Gascoigne.
Oh, I'm cringing as you say
it. It wasn't pleasant, I'll say that.
My number four is the Senegalese striker El Hadj Diouf. I think that's how you pronounce it.
Mm-hmm.
He's basically famous for spitting. Spitting at players, spitting at fans, spitting at allegedly homeless people. This is a man who likes to spit. You don't get the nickname the camel without spitting.
Oh, it shouldn't be funny, but it is. Yeah. All right, well, my number three is Graham Souness. I've heard him described as Renoir with a razor, and a lot of his tackles were pretty vicious, but more so in the Roy Keane style, he remembered everything.
Yeah.
So after his playing days were over, he became a manager. And shortly before signing for Turkish club Galatasaray, he had open-heart surgery. So he signs for Galatasaray, and a director for Fenerbahce, who's their arch-rival, makes fun of him for being a cripple. And he says he can't believe they signed a cripple. So Souness remembers this, and months later, when Galatasaray beats Fenerbahce in the last minute of extra time, he looks up into the stands and sees this Fenerbahce director and is so incensed that he grabs this giant Galatasaray flag, sprints out to midfield, and just spikes it in the middle of Fenerbahce stadium and pretty much incites a 55,000-person riot.
I knew about Graham Souness growing up before I'd even seen the old footage of him playing, because every time he came on television, my dad used to just look at him and say, nasty piece of work. His idea of tackling someone was to put your cleats into that person's groin area.
Yeah. Or like forcefully. any joint that could potentially be destroyed or ruptured. He was really nice like that. He's a good guy. Good guy.
My number three is Jermaine Pennant. Mostly, I mean, he's not so much of a bad boy, but he is still, as far as I know, the only player to play in the English Premier League while wearing an electronic ankle tag. He was arrested for the triple whammy of drunk driving.
Here we go.
Driving while disqualified. And driving without insurance.
Clap it up for Jermaine, everybody. Yeah. Clap
and
it up.
Icing on the cake, it was Ashley Cole's car, which he'd borrowed.
Oh, well then, that makes it okay.
And he would have got away with it if he hadn't hit that lamppost.
Nice. Well, my number two did a fair amount of poor maneuvering on the field. That's Francis Lee. In 1972, he set the English record for most number of penalties scored. And there's actually a reason for that, which is that to some referees, he is known as the biggest diver of all time.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
So he was the Eduardo of the 70s.
Worse than that. Essentially, defenders would openly admit that they would foul him before he could turn, because otherwise he was just going to run straight at you, kick the ball past, and then run smack into you and fall down. But the inventor of the dive definitely makes the dirtiest player list.
Wow. All right, my number two bad boy is someone who's not very famous, but he's a cult hero to Reading and Cardiff fans.
Mm-hmm.
His name is Robin Friday. There was a book written about him that I read called The Greatest Player You Never Saw. So he played in lower leagues and apparently had all the talent of, say, George Best, but had double the drinking problem.
that's an impressive feat when you top George Best in the drinking.
It's incredible. He turned up to one Reading team talk, and this is another triple whammy. This is better than Jermaine Pennant.
Uh-oh.
He turned up to a Reading team talk, one, drunk, two, naked, three, carrying a swan, which he'd just stolen from the local lake.
I need a minute. Wow. So we turn away from lovable characters to nefarious characters, because I feel like we both have number one.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think we might have the same man.
That'd be Joey Barton?
Yeah.
Yeah, Joey Barton is quite the character. I feel like there's no real way to go through the list in detail, so I just kind of broke it down by year. Starting with 2004.
Like a greatest hits.
Yeah, pretty much. So I started with 2004.
Literally.
Yeah, almost, actually. Nice, well said. In 2004, he put a cigarette out in one of his teammates' eyes.
I believe it was a cigar, which is bigger.
Excuse me, a cigar, of course. yeah, not sure why, but it was at a Christmas party. I feel that's the way to celebrate it.
And it was a youth team
player. You know, I mean, he was young. He had it coming. They'll heal, sort of. With surgery. In 2005, he hit a pedestrian with a car while driving drunk. He was fined and suspended. That's going to become a theme. 2006, he mooned Everton fans. You know, just needed to be done.
That was actually kind of funny.
Maybe.
Cheeky.
Oh, nice. Puns galore here at the Total Football Soccer Show. In 2007, Barton was suspended by Manchester City after a training ground altercation with Ousmane Dabo.
Yeah.
Which left his teammate needing hospital treatment.
If you're brave enough to do the Google image search for that, then be prepared. Because Dabo literally, he sort of looks like the elephant man after that. It is horrific.
Yeah, which kind of leads nicely into 2008, where Barton was jailed for 6 months after drunkenly assaulting two individuals following a late-night drinking binge. One, he's captured on closed-circuit television hitting at least 20 times in the face. And the second was actually a teenager who was left with broken teeth when Barton punched him in the face.
Oof.
And it's actually a bit fitting that he still plays for Newcastle, seeing as they're black and white striped kits, because, you know, now he can just nicely go from training to prison and then back and forth because they have pretty much the same uniform. So it all works out in the end.
So that was our top five footballing bad boys. If you've got a list of your own top five footballing bad boys to join our Hall of Shame here, then send them to us at soccer@wrir.org. So we're getting towards the end of the show, which means it must be time for the spelling bee, where Taylor and myself challenge each other to spell players' names. In the series so far, Taylor is leading 2-1.
Indeed.
Last week we did Italian players. This week, Spanish players.
All right, so Daryl, I would like for you to spell David Belangur of Getafe.
I'll be honest, I looked at this guy. And I didn't know how to pronounce it, so I didn't use it.
Well, I looked at this guy, and I didn't know how to pronounce it either, but I used it anyway. So spell me, David Belangur.
Okay, so David.
Mm-hmm.
B-E-L.
Mm-hmm.
E-N-G.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the tough bit. U-E-R.
That is correct. Well done. Well done.
Okay, I would like for you to spell for me Moises Hurtado, the defensive midfielder for Espanyol.
Moises Hurtado?
Mm-hmm.
M-O-I-S-E-S? G-E-T-A-D-O. Why is that a shame?
Because you got the hard bit right, the M-O-I-S-E-S. Uh-huh. But Hurtado is spelled H-U-R. T-A-D-O.
Unfortunately, in America, we don't recognize H as a letter, so I think you may be wrong. But probably not. So Daryl has evened the score at 2-2, and I'm going to go cry in my shame corner.
But before you go and do that, Tyler, I believe we need to close the show with a quote.
Right. So in the words of Vinnie Jones from the movie Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels, it's been emotional.